The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
This conversation's accompanying wine is Tanazzi Imperio Primitivo, a big, rich, fruity wine, but fairly balanced and a powerful wine for powerful conversations.
Welcome to the She Word, conversations that women rarely have but really should. If you're joining us on YouTube, I'm just going to remind you, somewhere underneath here, there is a subscribe button, and subscription is free. But join us, subscribe to this channel, and if you're on Spotify, exactly the same, because that means you're not going to miss a show. Also, of course, if you're joining us on YouTube or Spotify and have not yet joined us on TikTok, on Instagram, LinkedIn, or on Facebook, please do head your way there. Like us or follow us, subscribe, whatever you need to do, because we have the most incredible year coming up for you, and I want to make sure that you don't miss out on anything. Now, speaking about this incredible year that's coming up, I want to just give you the heads up. We have announced and we are inviting you to get involved in the She Word Live, which is going to be at the MCC on the 24th and 25th of May. This is the first of its kind here in Malta, two dedicated days dedicated to empowering women in the workplace and women in the world. The 24th is all for you women in the workplace. Make sure you subscribe to that, get yourself joined up, signed up, and come along to that. And then on the 25th, it is Women in the World. We have some of the best speakers joining us from around the globe, as well as Malta-based and Maltese women, keynote speeches, panel discussions, Q&A, meet and greet, and so much more. Head to the socials. The socials will guide you as to where you need to go to be part of this amazing event. Now, if you're a Patreon page subscriber, as I say every week, I want to say a very special thank you to you. We're very aware of the fact that sometimes we talk about topics that are really, really powerful. And just by being a Patreon subscriber, 50% of our profits from Patreon page goes straight to the Richmond Foundation to support women who need therapy, or they need counseling, or they need guidance, but they cannot afford it. So thank you to you Patreon subscribers, because you are making a difference. If you haven't signed up to Patreon yet, do go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/thesheword, and there you're going to find exclusive content, content that comes out before anybody else gets to see it, special offers. Also, of course, part of that She Word Live is going to be on offer to you too. It is a great place to do amazing things. So if you're joining us here for the first time, I want to let you know, we have great topics discussed here on the She Word. Sometimes they're fun, sometimes they're entertaining, and some conversations are harder to have. And some conversations are just very, very important. In this episode, we're looking at the topic of women navigating depression. And with 10.8% of women reported to be living with depression, this is a topic that is so important to us at the She Word. You may have been facing depression, you may face it in the future, but that's a huge percentage of women living with depression right now. And I am extremely proud that we're having this conversation and extremely grateful for the women that are joining me at this table. Nikki Vella Di Framo. Hello.
Hello.
Hello to you. I interviewed you for the very first time back in 2015. We've known each other for nearly a decade.
Quite a while.
You're a mum of five. You're a professional. You're a lawyer. And you had firsthand experience of what it's like to be scrutinized in public for your mental health. You've also been outspoken.
I've been assassinated.
We're coming to that in a second, but you've also been outspoken in the media about your journey with depression,
yes.
Even when this has not been an easy or popular choice. And I'm going to let you fill in the details of that in just a moment. Joanna Bartet, you're an accomplished and well-known artist, having exhibited, what now, 4 solo exhibitions?
Solos, another one coming up in March. So next
amazing.
Month.
You're also a mother of 2, and you've been very, very open on social media with regards to your challenges related to mental health and depression. And Eleanor Mamo, thank you so much for joining us. You're a counselling psychologist. How do I say this? Gestalt?
Gestalt, yes.
Gestalt.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be finding out what that is in a minute. Yeah. Psychotherapist and accredited VIG practitioner. Again, I'll be looking for you in a second to fill in the details. But you are also a specialist in perinatal mental health.
That's right.
Which is incredibly key to this discussion as well, and related depression.
Definitely.
That is the mental health of women who are pregnant and going all the way through until a year after giving birth. So we're going to come to you in a second. I'm so glad that you're here, and I just want to say a huge thank you before we get going for taking part
thank
in this
you.
Conversation.
Thank you for asking.
Well, Nikki, I want to start off with you because you jumped right in there and said I was assassinated.
I was.
But tell me a little bit more about you. You are a public known figure, and you have spoken very, very publicly about depression. But fill in the details.
Okay, so basically I was a public figure before the political disaster. But what happened was I've always been a very carefree person, very relaxed, very outgoing, very positive. And what happened to me was something which I never thought was even possible. I was pregnant with my second child. And when she was 5 months pregnant, I just started having suicidal thoughts. I mean, she was a very clingy child. I mean, hello, sorry about this. I'm exposing my daughter, but she knows about it, so it's fine. And she was very clingy, but it has nothing to do with her. I lost my 2 dogs, which people might think is very silly, but it had really affected me. And so I was very sad towards the end of my pregnancy. And I had my baby. I already had my eldest one, Ali. And within 5 months after, I just started feeling so sad, but this overwhelming sadness, which I didn't want to show anyone. I couldn't understand what the hell was going on. It was just, you know, I would try and sort of not meet the helper in the house. I would just escape to my room with the excuse that I need to sleep because the baby had slept all night, which wouldn't be true. I would pass by the Adorata Cemetery and say, oh, how lucky. And I'm so afraid of dying because I don't want to die, as if. It's the last thing I want to do. I love life. You know,
but this reminds me of a line in a Robbie Williams song. I don't want to die, but I ain't keen on living either.
Yes, but it's because you want to escape from
the truth.
From your body. From
exactly,
that,
you want to get away from you.
From you. And anyway, so from then onwards, then one time I just decided that it was the end. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was just going to walk out of the house and I didn't have any plans, so I don't think I was going to do anything. But the overwhelming sense of helplessness, darkness, not wanting to do anything. I couldn't bond with my daughter. I couldn't do anything. And I was a happy mommy making fairy cakes, you know, singing and dancing in the kitchen. And, you know, that's me, crazy mommy, the bad mom. And it was gone. Just all of a sudden. And from then onwards, I had gone to a doctor and they had prescribed Prozac, which he told me was to be given for 6 months. And within a month, I said, as if. I just stopped them, which apparently is really bad to do, but I did. And I was fine. But after that, some silly incident would just trigger, you know. Now, that wasn't a depression, that was the bedridden depression. The depression became different after, because the depression that I get now, rarely, but when it happens, it hits hard and I find myself to be bedridden, literally bedridden.
I'm excited because that's
excited. Thank you.
No, I'm excited that you're sharing this story because I think this is going to resonate with a lot of women, and I think you have a lot to say during this show. But that's kind of the backstory to the depression
yes,
journey.
Yes, it started off with a postnatal depression because there was I was absolutely.
I'm so glad that Ellen is here because obviously we're going to touch on that.
Yeah.
Joanna, just fill in the details of who you are. You are an artist,
yes.
But you've also spoken
I've probably
out.
Always been an artist, but I never really claimed it. You know, I was like, I do this on the side, I paint a little, even to say the word artist. Nowadays, I realize, like, listen, you've been living your life. Because you're an artist, these things happen to you, you know, you're a little bit different. So basically, you have to navigate. But funnily enough, the first time I had really dealt with something that I thought, okay, something's going on really badly here with me, was after I had the courage to have my first solo. Now, before I had my first solo, I used to say, I will never exhibit my work because my work is very personal to me and I'd rather stand in Sweetie Road in my balcony naked than exhibit. I would say, have my exhibition when I'm dead. I don't want to come. I don't want to be there. Anyway, somehow people convinced me.
Oh, you're so talented.
But I always thought, you know, I'd have
an insecurity.
The work I exhibited in that first exhibition, on certain days, if I had a big tub of black paint, I was capable of just destroying
it
all.
Wow.
Yes. Anyway, nothing to do really with the exhibition, but after the exhibition, where everything was looked beautiful and I knew it, and I sold most of the work, so it was a huge success. I was so happy that I crumbled.
Okay.
So I'm sorry to tell you, but kind of was so happy.
No.
Anxiety set off, triggered by a very happy event.
Like, yes.
This
is
shocking
to
deal with.
Really, really
it's crazy,
important.
But I could never understand it. Like,
yeah. But you know, they do.
I spoke to other artists and nobody felt it. They always said, like, that's the anticlimax. No. I felt, you know, those, when you're in a Luna Park, and there are those machines where you just hit it with an axe or a big hammer and it goes brrr, to the top and you've hit jackpot. I couldn't come down.
Well, we're going to find out how your journey took you to bring you back down again, because obviously this is something...
You need to level it, not go down.
How different, but... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ellen, just fill in your details because you are our expert today.
Yes. So I've always felt a pull to this profession, like a vocation. It's something that's in the family as well. So my mother and my grandfather as well are also in the helping profession. So it was a natural transition for me to start studying psychology and to pursue it and to go into my master's in Gestalt psychotherapy and my master's in counseling psychology. And I find the two really support each other beautifully, looking at normative population, so people who are happy-go-lucky, artists who are going through life and then just experience a life adjustment or something that is just doesn't feel right, something that's different, and how we can help navigate them through those experiences and face the demons or the difficulties that are maybe very difficult for them to actually touch upon and face. So that's really my calling. That's something that I feel so passionate about. And Gestalt really merges that because it's all about dialogue and holism and seeing yourself as a whole person. So I think that has given me such a lot of encouragement for myself to even look at my own journey, but also to help all these people who I've had the honor to be part of their own journey as well. And I'm really grateful to hear these stories and to be part of this podcast and hopefully support other women and men as well who might be hearing this and hearing things that would be true to them as well. I had the opportunity whilst working at Mater Dei to be part of the perinatal mental health clinic. And I learned so much from the midwives, the psychiatrists, the OTs, the social workers, the gynecologists who formed part of that team. And we had the GP as well, a pediatrician. So there's this whole multidisciplinary team that are there and ready to support, plus all the therapeutic team as well at the psychology department who are there on a governmental level, obviously, to provide support to these women and men when possible, to I don't know, just go through pregnancy and the postpartum period, which is beautiful and the best time of your life.
Ellen, you mentioned just a second ago about a big event in someone's life and how that can actually trigger depression. You also talked about this perinatal depression, which touches on Nikki's journey.
Is there a link between the
fantastic. Two? Fantastic. Well, hang on a second, because I'm going to also just share a little bit of my story and then some statistics. You guys are just, you're amazing. But you mentened back there just a second ago, Nikki, you mentioned about Prozac. And in 1998, I was prescribed in the UK that I had depression. And I was prescribed a drug called Ceroxat, which was supposed to be the new Prozac. And this was 1998, so it's not even in this century. And unfortunately, the side effects, whilst they said it was not addictive, back then it was brand new to the market. And the recommended dose was 20 milligrams a day. Because the side effects were so incredible, nobody could get me off it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up being on 60 milligrams a day. And we're going to talk about that Prozac. We're going to talk about how to treat. And you just mentioned about being proactive. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to run through some statistics. Then I'm going to throw the conversation onto the table and you guys can run with it. Mm-hmm. So as recently as the 1950s, individuals who grappled with mental health disorders were deemed unfit to live independently within the realms of a community and were often committed to mental hospitals, which were known as mental institutions. And I say, I'd love to say that that is only existing in the 1950s. No way that it just is confined to the 1950s. Key findings in the National Center for Health Statistics show that more than 8% of adults older than 20 years old reported having depression during any given two-week period. Women were almost twice as likely as men who reported depression. And I want to be very clear about this, because these statistics are only referring to, and we talked about this before, they're only referring to the people who have reported having depression. 10.4% of women and 5.5% of men. And this is exactly why later on in the year we'll be having the he word, because we believe that these statistics are also skewed. That means that about 280 million people worldwide live with depression and are known, according to the WHO, which is the World Health Organization.
Who?
The World
Health. you got me there.
She was going to have to keep an eye on Nikki. I'm telling you. Someone move the wine away. Depression is more common in people who give birth, in mothers. 10% of pregnant women and new mums who experience depression, according to WHO. And depression can be hereditary. We already touched on this before we came onto the show. People who have an immediate family member living with depression may have 2 to 3 times greater risk of having depression, according to Stanford Medicine. So I want to just, I'm going to sit back in a second and let you guys do all of the work. But I want to start off by asking one question. And I think, Nikki, you probably have more experience in this personally than most, but that's just a huge assumption simply because of your public persona. If depression is affecting 10% of women at any one time that are known, so we can estimate that the statistics are much higher, why are there still issues addressing the topic? And we're not talking about mental health at this moment, because mental health and depression, I would say, are actually not exactly the same thing. Mental health issues, you know, cover a broad spectrum. We're talking specifically about depression. Why are there still issues talking about this in 2024?
There's so much shame, Trudy. It's very shameful. It's actually like the D word, you know.
It falls within the category of mental health illness. So we're talking about illness. Now, depression is the mildest form of mental health illness. It's not even an illness. It's a condition.
I wouldn't say it could be the mildest form, because it's the one that triggers suicidal ideation.
Exactly. Yes, it is. But that's an extremity. But what happens is this. and I'm not one to teach you, but from my own personal experience, it's the whole issue is this, that when I, you said that I was a public figure. Yes, I was a public figure before I was catapulted into the, unwillingly, into the political sphere. And I was, my mental health condition, which was depression, which was caused by postpartum depression, and which was accentuated by the fact that I unwittingly found myself in the political realm, was used against me by the people who I thought were on my side. Mm. So instead of having me supported and having a supportive, team, or my depression was manipulated to make me seem that I was some kind of crazy person, because I'm quite an opinionated person, and I don't tolerate any form of wrongdoing or any form of if I think something is wrong, or if I think that, or if I sort of say something and then you sort of like turn on to me and say, no, you didn't say that. I mean, intense gaslighting. Okay, sorry, I thought you were stopping me.
No, because you said something, and I'm my menopausal brain frog is doing this, because you said something that just really, really triggered a massive thought in my head. We had this conversation, Nikki said, about it being the most extreme, and whether it is extreme or not extreme.
No, it's not extreme.
No, but I just want to ask a question that relates to what both these ladies also said. We use the term... So if you talk about something like bipolar, or you talk about...
Yeah, but they accuse me of being bipolar.
Hang on a second. Or schizophrenia. Hang on a second. If you use those terms, those are terms that are, I would consider,
a
extreme.
A scale higher.
But we all say, I feel a bit... But don't we all say from time to time, I feel a bit depressed? And so we normalize...
But no, but you know the difference is...
I know there is a difference.
People don't understand the difference between being sad and being depressed.
That's
I'm
really
depressed.
Hurting.
When you're sad,
yeah, come on. When you're like depressed, smile, you don't, make us laugh.
When you're depressed, you don't even have. I mean, I can say for myself, when I'm depressed, and thank God for my children, because they understand me so well and they are my saving grace, you don't even have the strength to get out of bed, have a shower. You don't even have the strength to turn around and reach out for your bottle of water.
Sure.
So you just like a vegetable. It's just so debilitating.
So there are the
when you're sad, you cry.
Eleanor, we need a classification of the difference between mental health issues, depression, and feeling depressed. Because I think we want to clarify
this. Yes, I think, as you said, feeling depressed, feeling sad is something that we all go through. It's normal. You have the ups and downs, the cycles of life that we do experience. But when you are depressed, when you are clinically depressed, when you have gone through a period of feeling the way you're feeling, maybe not even as severe all the time, for a 2-week period, then you can say that you are experiencing depression. So that is one of the clinical...
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So if you're feeling...
Like you can't get out of bed.
Not only,
not because there are different levels. No,
people
of
who actually are happy, and then next day you find out that they committed suicide.
So
that's a mask.
No, but so there's a happy depression.
People learn how to mask what they are going through because of the self-stigma, the shame that they experience, and the inability to say, I'm not okay.
Look, I can tell you one thing. If you called me to take part in this and I was feeling really depressed, like I was, or anxious, there's no way I would talk about it. Not even people who know me well knew.
I would have gone out of bed.
Some people knew. Because I knew that they weren't going to judge me. But there's a lot of judgment.
Yeah.
I know. There's even people are going to see this being advertised.
Mijnuna.
Look what she's doing.
That's what
she's
going to say.
You know, this woman.
Exactly.
But then, for example, you're at the hairdresser. And you give a little hint.
Everyone
that
starts
you
talking.
Have anxiety, which is safer than saying you have depression. In fact, on Facebook, I barely use the proper word depression. I use anxiety. Anxiety is kind of okay. Panic attacks also, which is like the most, the scariest thing you can experience. But for some mad reason, it's okay. It's almost cool, almost.
Eleanor, why? Why? I just want to, before we go down there, because this is a big topic.
Definitely.
But you both said such powerful things in the first 5 minutes. And I just want to keep bringing this back to What is the difference between anxiety, between mental health, between something that we, you know, we were talking there about what is a more extreme?
Yeah.
And depression. Let's just make sure we're talking about depression. We said yes. 2 weeks. If you're feeling depressed.
If you're feeling apathetic, riddled with guilt, worthless, tearful, changing moods, obviously appetite, your behavior starts changing, a sense of isolation, feeling worthless, hopefully not, but suicidal ideation as well can also be part of the presentation of depression. So it's not just feeling depressed. So it's not something that passes because you've seen something sad on television or you're going through just a difficult moment.
Or someone hurts you with some words or you get a disappointment because you were planning on something that doesn't work out.
At the same time,
it's just different. Like you're in the abyss. You're just so when you go,
there are different levels. So there are different severities of depression. So in a sense, we look at the mild, the moderate, and the severe. Mm-hmm. So when someone is going through suicidal ideation, bedridden for days, they don't shower, they don't change, and they can't tend to their children, for example, we would look at that as severe mental health.
But that causes a lot of shame in itself.
Of course. Because
to wake up like at 7 a.m., and pretend you didn't wake up till like 10:30, 11.
Oh God, I woke up.
And then you have to wake up and you're like, yeah, okay, now walk to the kitchen. You're going to be fine. Walk to the kitchen.
You're going to be fine. I wouldn't manage.
Put the clothes in the machine. You sit down to put the clothes in the machine and you can't stand up. And it takes you 5 minutes. You're sitting on the floor like, yeah, you can do it. Get up.
So what you're picking up on is the self-talk. You can do it. Okay, you've got this.
It's a big struggle, huh?
Of course, it's a big struggle.
Tiring. It's and very exhausting.
But you're a hero,
but it's not fun. Who cares if you're a hero? I want to do well.
No, but I am not even capable of doing that. The severity of my depression was accentuated when people, you know, who didn't even know me, decided to label me and even being in the political, within a political party, my mental health was used as a tool to weaken me. And so it became, and this I'm really glad and I really make sure that this goes public. I was so sick and tired of being labeled as mad, and I was deemed to be, well, I was classified as by certain people, and the rumor was spread that I was bipolar. Now, if I was bipolar, I'm so verbal and I'm so outspoken.
You'd say it.
That I would say it. I have absolutely no shame in saying that I suffer from depression, and I have so much no shame whatsoever, but a lot of guilt insofar as my children are concerned, because otherwise I don't give a damn what anybody says, because I've been crucified to the bone. But when I meet people and they tell me, for example, you know, because I say, because, you know, people say that I'm bipolar. Yes, I've heard it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what the hell? So what's wrong if I was bipolar? And what is wrong if somebody suffers and is a, you know, a person who has bipolar disease?
The thing is this, I've noticed.
But how dare you invent and try and use someone's weakness because they are a threat and because it's a vulnerability.
But don't you get people who tell you me too? Because I've been, like I was going to say before, you're sitting at the hairdresser and you kind of give a little hint that you're on some kind of medication, which thank God now I'm not. But at one time I was on 4 different types. Nothing ever helped me. Good for you if medication helps you take it. I'm not saying you shouldn't take medication.
No, you have to.
In my case, never found medication helpful.
It can be a huge resource.
Yes,
but in my case, no. I still carry a Sedoxil in my bag wherever I go in case of a panic attack. But
a safety
it stays there probably.
But sometimes in extreme depression,
I've noticed that if I'm at the hairdresser, for example, usually at the hairdresser, there are strangers. And you bring up a slight hint, because you're like putting out a feeler there, about anxiety or medication.
Because if you need to talk about it, say
9 or 8.5 times out of 10, the two people on either side are going to say, me too. Yeah. I'm on this. I've been on this since I was 18. And these people look sorted. As much as she looked. So I once saw Nikki on the cover of The Circle. And I used to think, oh my God, this woman has it all sorted. She has five kids, right?
Five.
She's a successful lawyer. Beautiful. Like, for me, it seemed like she had it all.
But isn't this
a great marriage?
But I really stopped talking about depression.
Little did I know that this person, I hadn't started suffering from depression. She just had all my, I admired her. How we never know what's going on beneath the mask, beneath
that was
the surface.
I had already spoken out about
it. I didn't know about that. About maybe I think I have ADHD. I don't read.
No, I just saw
the pictures.
But no, the pictures, yes. But the whole point is this, that when you look at a person, when I first met Trudy, for example, I mean, she was so bubbly and so, and still is. And even me, for example, you know, when you meet me on a good day, it's a bad time, you won't see me because I'm like a slug in bed, you know. Mm. But when I met her and then I read her story about her, you know, having, I mean, I don't know if I can mention it, I mean, your suicide attempt, her harming herself, I thought, what the hell? This is Trudy. She looks like such an extrovert, such a positive person. I mean, there was no way in hell that I would
because
have even imagined.
Because society tells you need to be a certain way.
That you were a sufferer like I was.
If I can jump in here, it's the inability that we have to be able to hold that someone so bubbly and positive can also, at the same time, experience extreme hardship. And I think that difficulty of holding two very opposing emotions within the same person can cause that shame of being like, if I'm this happy and bubbly and creative, how can I be going through a depression? It doesn't fit.
It doesn't hit me like that.
I have a story about bubbly. I'll tell
but
you.
There
remind
is something
me.
Else. There is something else that's involved in that. And I was very fortunate because depression and my challenges were related specifically to a period of time that I was going through and a divorce and a separation that I was going through and his behavior, which, you know, you talked about triggering, mm-hmm. there being a triggered event. Mm-hmm. The triggered event which sparked my depression was getting married.
Mm.
I know, and this is supposed to be the happiest day of your life.
I like my exhibition.
I walked down the aisle.
Yeah.
Like my life.
I walked down the aisle, you know, knowing that it wasn't going to work, and it triggered depression straight after that.
Yeah.
Because
you're not living.
How I ended up in that circumstances. Yeah. But absolutely, I 200% believe, and I'm very lucky because that was.
But did you find yourself sort of like, because depression, I feel, comes back sometimes and hurls its ugly head.
Yes, of course.
And it whacks you in the head.
Yes.
And every time it whacks you harder and harder and harder.
I think, and we're going to come to this, we're going to come to coping mechanisms further on in the show.
Okay.
But I think that there are signs.
I don't think you ever sort of like...
Yeah. I think there are signs that something is... No, I'm heading in a direction. I have one thing a habit that I have that I'm still... My nearly 50 years, I'm still trying to break. And I know when that comes that's a dodgy ground for me. Mm. It doesn't come very often, but when it comes, I recognize it and I know that I need to take some action. I need to be around people or I need to do, and it's the last thing that you want to do. What you really want to
exactly.
do is go home,
oh
grab
God.
Yourself a bottle of wine,
hey,
drink the whole lot and take, you know.
For me, it was Netflix. But then I, you know what?
That's
when I was terribly bad.
Honestly, when I was so terribly bad...
I just
drink
vegetate.
We're gonna come
I watch
to
Netflix
those.
And I can't remember anything.
We're gonna come to those.
Even those months. What happened?
It's blank.
We're gonna come to those coping mechanisms and also those symptoms in a second. I want to just still nail this topic.
We're taking over the show. We're stealing her questions.
I want to nail this question, and Eleanor has something that she wants to say. She's put her hand up because she's sitting with these amazing women. We're going to be doing this. Whoever's holding. Let me put it like this. Whoever's holding the nuts gets to speak, right? Hold the nuts and hold the nuts tightly. There's some hot ones.
Stop me.
Nikki's got a whole bunch of nuts in her hands.
I have nuts. I'm telling you, I have nuts.
Eleanor, we're going to come to you because I believe we're still tackling this topic of why the shame, why the execution, the public execution, why if there are, let's say there's 10% of women experiencing depression, not feeling a bit blue, depression
yeah.
right now. And we're saying that that's a very conservative estimate, because I'm pretty sure that you ladies, when you had depression, the last thing that you wanted to do is go and register, I've got depression.
No, you won't talk about it.
So what is it? What is the shame about? Jump in, because you're jumping to get in there.
I don't think there's an answer to why. There is no one answer to why something happens. It would be a whole barrage of different events, internal and external, and something that you mentioned, coping strategies, but also protective factors that we need to also consider that can support someone to reach out. Because when you are in that state, like Joanna was saying, and even Nikki, you're not going to go up and say, ah, I need help. I need to speak to somebody. I'm not okay. Because the type of the way that you're speaking to yourself is so negative, usually. The way you're seeing yourself, the world around you, just
no hope.
Everything mm-hmm. is just exactly no hope. This sense of helplessness and hopelessness. And helplessness is one of the features of depression. Uh-huh. So how can you help yourself get out of this place? It puts on the guilt. And guilt is also another factor that contributes to feeling depressed, because you want to put the load in and then go mm. do something else in the house and take care of the kids and walk the dog. But you just don't have the motivation and you don't feel like. So there's this, all of these things going on inside of you that then just stop you from doing what you need to be done. And that is so difficult to connect with and to face. So I think that is one of the internal reasons as to why. An external reason is we don't have this conversation. So people might not say, ah, okay, so this is not what I'm meant to be feeling every winter. Mm. This is not
the darkness,
normal darkness, for me to be feeling and to be thinking about myself and the world in this way. So maybe reaching out will help. And there's that, at least that question. So hopefully this conversation and conversations like this that will be triggered through this podcast can help someone identify themselves, but also identify others.
I mean, this is why I came on the show. I wouldn't bother, you know.
Which I think is absolutely beautiful.
For me, the wine and the nuts. But, that's
but before we... Why would I bother if I... You know how many... I got hundreds of messages. Hundreds. And with people asking, you know, men and women who battled depression, who were driven to addiction because of depression, who have been seeking psychiatric help and psychological help to no avail, are swallowing 16 tablets a day and nothing seems to help them, their son or whatever, and they're so ashamed, and they send you a private message because they tell me, you know, I don't post it on your mm-hmm. chat, and it breaks my heart, because there's really nothing to be ashamed of, because, and you know what, I say that I'm a sufferer. I battle depression mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because I'm not a sufferer. I'm not a victim. I battle it because it is an illness. Somebody sent me a message, and he said, I'm glad that you're handling your problem.
Problem. That's so condescending.
I said, but I didn't bother. I said, problem. It's not a problem. It's a condition. I said, so if you break your leg, I said, would you just leave it, you know, dangling along? Or would you go and have it fixed and have it plastered?
Which, Nikki, leads me very nicely into another question, because I'm wanting to get to the basics. You've exactly just there hit the nail on the head. My next question to you is, we know that depression can be hereditary, mm-hmm. but I think it's really important to absolutely qualify this. What causes a woman or a man to experience, in our case, a woman, because there are other factors which influenced you, to experience depression? I'm going to get you guys to just hold off and hold your nuts just for a second. Is it, because I want to ask, is it physiological influences? Is it psychological influences? Is it hereditary influences? Or is it a combination of all? These ladies are full of life, beautiful, stunning women. And both of them have been hit by depression the point of their lives when you think that they should be celebrating.
See how full of life they are.
Exactly. That's my point. It's the nuts. It's the nuts and the wine. But what causes depression, just because I want to blow this away, because as you said, anybody can be affected by depression. Yep. If we don't know why, we can't actually qualify it. So I'm going to let Eleanor speak for a second from a professional viewpoint. I love to.
So it is a combination of everything. So yes, there is the hereditary component, there is the physiological, there is the psychological, there is the behavioral as well. So I think a case in point, COVID, we've all experienced it. The mental health of the nation, of the world during this time, and how it severely impacted so many people, because there was the environmental block of you can't meet people, especially elderly, but even those who...
Surgeries have escalated.
I mean, it's crazy what the environment can do to you. Even the environment that you work in, the environment that you live in, how important art is, because if you...
Yeah, so we have the environmental, okay, because I want to get to...
Yeah.
We've got environmental impact. So if somebody's watching this show and they're thinking about, am I vulnerable to depression?
Yes.
Am I experiencing depression? First of all, we've got environmental. We know COVID caused, like you just nodded, it caused a lot of anxiety for all of us.
Now, I also loved it.
You loved it, but the rest of us were a little bit anxious. But it caused anxiety for a lot of people.
Yes.
But for some people, that pushed across into depression.
Yes.
So you've got environmental.
Yes. There's also physiological. For example, if you've had sleeping well, so you're not getting enough sleep in, that can also affect your nervous system, your limbic system, and that can also affect your mental health.
Your hormones.
Your hormones, exactly. So going through puberty as an adolescent girl, going through pregnancy, postpartum, menopause, these all affect on a physiological and biological level, all of these changes in hormones and life experiences do affect your mental health, and obviously can trigger depression. Depression is obviously not the only thing that can be triggered, but we do know that depression is one of the things that can be triggered on a physiological level as well.
It is about blinking time that society just woke up and accepted the fact that somebody is depressed. Not judge them or label them because they're depressed.
You're right.
You know, because ultimately so many people, and because of COVID, and me obviously always being the weirdo, I liked COVID because I had my kids all at home, I didn't have to give lifts.
That's another thing. You didn't have to go out.
What I want to take away from the question that I asked.
Yes.
Is that there really isn't... I've used this phrase before on this show. There is a perfect storm. Basically, there needs to be a number of factors that come together, whether they're hereditary, physiological, psychological. It could be an event. In your instance, I mean, I'm quite sure somebody would say to you, you got depression after the best day of your life.
Exactly, that's what everyone said.
And with regards to yourself, you've just had a child and you have other factors. But what we're saying is that there's not a recipe. We can't go through a checklist going, okay, this, you've got depression.
But truly, it stems from childhood. Eh?
It could.
So just we build an image of ourselves from the day we're born, and even in utero. So we are constantly evolving and trying to understand who we are. We're making sense of the world. So we create these internal working models, we would call it. So the way you view yourself, the way you view your world, from childhood, from day one. And if from day one you're told, you're not very good at this, or you can't do much better than that, or look at your brother, how amazing he is, or always being put down or compared, and there's this repetitive cycle, or experiencing childhood trauma, whether it's domestic violence, witnessing or experiencing unfortunate events, losses, early losses, having a mother who isn't being able to be present, or a father who isn't able to be present, that could also affect your worldview, not just of the world, but
generational.
Also of yourself.
Generational. I mean, like my age bracket, our parents were subjected to war.
Yes.
They were infants. Mm-hmm. For example, my mom was born in the bedroom of her home and taken straight down to the shelter. Now, imagine what fear there was in that room, you know?
Yes.
Like bombs are like, it can happen any minute. You could
but
be
then this is where the perfect storm comes in and the protective factors come in, because not everybody who experienced war and who is experiencing war
suffers
from depression and suffers from trauma. Some people are, we are all made differently internally and through the environment and through what we experience and how we make sense of what we experience.
So let me ask you a question. Because it coming back to something that no everyone,
not just you,
not just you. Nikki said something a second ago. Nikki was very insistent that depression is normalized, and this is why we're doing this show. If there is a perfect storm of contributing factors that comes together to make somebody's experience lean towards depression and head down, and we're going to come to this in a second about the sliding, we talk about sliding into depression. We're going to talk about that in a second because I think that's very, very important. If these contributing factors all come together, perfect storm, you said, and I'm just going to touch on that, but somebody else might have an exhibition and their exhibition is the best day of their life and they don't go into depression afterwards.
That's a normal thing.
But your perfect storm contributed to that. And likewise for you, Nikki, you're saying normalize this. If this is the fact that we need to normalize this, and we also, Joe just mentioned about people going through trauma, which is the war, lots of, and you just said, Eleanor, that lots of people go through trauma. Lots of people go through having babies. Lots of people go through having, well, probably not exhibitions, but they go through these experiences. Yeah. And some people are touched by depression and some are not. Mm-hmm. The truth is that it is a perfect storm of circumstances that comes together to create this entity. We still, as a society, see it as weakness. In all that is, in some people's experience, they'll go through the same experience that Joe went through or that Nikki went through. They don't have depression because there may just be one component, one single component.
The perfect storm, right?
Yeah. It has to take a perfect... Am I right in thinking that?
Yes. We're all different and we see the world differently. No two people, not even identical twins, have the exact same view of life, of themselves, because they are different people. So it's completely normal to feel like, but it doesn't make
sense.
Do you
have to be an empath to have depression, or
no.
Can it affect anyone?
It can affect anyone. Just something I want to say about normalizing depression. I think it's about normalizing speaking about depression, normalizing reaching out, because being depressed is not a normal experience in the sense that it is not your baseline.
No, of course not.
So I think it is so important because someone might take it for granted in the sense that it's no big deal, normalize depression, I'm depressed, so it's okay.
No, but
so I just want to make sure.
It is okay to be depressed. You know what? Because you have to understand that I will never accept and I will never tolerate being looked down upon because I suffer from depression. And I had a post on Facebook and which during an awful time in my life where my mental health was used against me. And you know what? You can function even though you suffer from depression. And I function very, very well.
So I think this is something that you should own. And it is beautiful that you were able to function whilst you experienced depression.
I had to fight for survival.
Yes.
Now, in survival mode, I functioned. But having said that, when it comes to being depressed in an ordinary, you know, matter of events, I don't function. Because I have to fight for myself.
Yes.
When I have to fight for others, even if it's for my children, because my children are not used to. So it happens to me once in a blue moon. But, I mean, were it not for my children, I probably would never come out of it because my children come in. I mean, they're the sweetest and the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I mean, 5, yes, everyone thinks I'm crazy. Yes, I am. But they come in and they check on me and they tell me, "Mom, you're going to be okay, you know?" And they see me in a very horrible, horrible place. But having said that, nobody has the right. I'm saying about depression should be normalized because so many people suffer from depression because it is like the baseline. It is like the sort of like step one.
10.8%. You know? But what Ellen
but
is saying.
But what they do, they say, "No, she has this."
But Nikki, but that's not depression. Ellen is,
no,
what
it's Ellen... not. But other people will judge you and they use your depression to make you seem, because when you go a bit higher than depression, for example, you say that somebody's bipolar or they're psychotic and they start hearing voices, when you go that step higher, then they should feel even more justified to consider you as mad. Depression is already enough to consider you as being off your rocker.
But hang on a second. What Eleanor is saying, and I think we're having the same conversation. Let's clarify this, because you put it beautifully. We're not normalizing depression. We're normalizing the conversation about depression. So in other words, we're saying that in that perfect storm, any single... And I'm going to put it out there, and Eleanor, you maybe want to, as a professional, just I'm pretty sure that you ladies would agree with this. Any single person on this planet, given the right conditions, will suffer from depression.
And then any person on the planet will thrive under the right conditions.
Exactly. And here, and this is why.
That's the beauty of it, because you can come out of it. In fact, if I was still depressed, I wouldn't come on the show. Why would I?
Because it's very relevant to what you just said. But Eleanor, I'm going to let you hold the nuts.
So I think it's really, really important to say that there is a way to get support. It is not terminal cancer. There is a lifetime effect of recurrency of depression that is research that is statistically proven, that once you have experienced one bout of depression, you are more likely to experience it again. But it doesn't mean that it is a life sentence. So,
but you have function. You can function.
You can function, but you can also learn about, as Trudy was saying, your triggers, what are your red flags, how can you cope? So what are the self-care mechanisms that you can, it could be depression, could be something else as well, obviously, but what I'm trying to say is that how important it is to get to know yourself, to seek help, to be able to see what it is that you need to remain healthy and to identify when you are experiencing going down the slide, to use your metaphor.
Exactly. And this is what I wanted to ask. And I'm going to ask Joe first, and then I'm going to come to you, Nikki. So hang on to your nuts.
Jimmy.
I'm going to keep saying this. Hang on to your nuts, girlfriend.
I'm the troublemaker.
We use a term, sliding into depression. Mm. You slide into depression, and it kind of... it kind of reiterates what you just said back there, because I myself notice triggers. And if I don't pull myself up on those triggers, I know that that's heading into a certain direction. I'm very blessed. I've not been in that position for at least 2 decades, if not more.
Lovely. That's fantastic. Amazing.
But I have to, as you said, you have to notice what those vulnerable points are and how you can take action. I want to ask you, Joe, and I'm coming to you in a second, Nikki, because I feel like I need to just finish on Nikki.
I feel like I'm at school. I'm always in trouble.
I just
want
to ask, because I'll give it to you.
We talk about this term sliding into depression.
We've talked
about the perfect storm, about all of these contributing factors coming together, which could be absolutely anything. We can't define and say that one experience is worse or one experience is more prevalent than others. In your case, you came out of your first solo exhibition. You obviously had other elements that contributed.
I wasn't aware of them.
To your perfect storm. You may not have known, but did you sense a slide? Were you aware that things were getting worse? Not then, but now, can you see
yes,
that?
Yes, I can. I can.
Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of things, like little things. For example, when you start getting anxiety attacks and you go to a professional and they give you medication, I used to think you get some kind of, you're going to get help.
In a sense, it is with medication in relation to finding the right medication and the right dose for you. So finding a psychiatrist who you trust and building a therapeutic relationship with your psychiatrist, to be honest, like talking about different things, that side effects. So you need to see what works for you, and everybody is different. So if you've tried the medication prescribed and you're getting these heavy nightmares, you're waking up, then you need to schedule another appointment with that psychiatrist. Say, listen, these did not work for me.
And I'm going to reiterate what Nikki said, because even with therapists, you don't find a relationship with that person whom you trust, seek out somebody who works for you. Because we cannot imagine that walking into the first therapist's office or a first psychiatrist's office, that they're going to understand you off the bat and they're going to know exactly what you need.
The brain,
it's complex.
It's complex. So what works for her
you find
might
the right
not
relationship.
Work for me.
So picking up on resources are so important, and we need to utilize, especially when you're feeling so helpless and worthless and in the abyss, like we've been saying, the resources are the most important thing, which are so difficult to tap into. Medication, unfortunately, didn't work for you, but they do work for so many people when they have the right treatment, and sometimes even the combination. So sometimes we look at combination therapy where there is a medication that is prescribed to help with the daily functioning, like Nikki mentioned before, to get their routine going again and to get a bit closer to baseline, so that therapy can then support even more in the understanding and also in the exercises and the support that can help.
So Ellen, just to reiterate what you were saying there,
mm-hmm.
what you're suggesting is that a medication, if someone is prescribed medication, one of the purposes of medication is just to boost you so that you can actually move to the next stage.
Yes,
for
sure.
You can actually go and get therapy and deal with what the underlying issues are.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a state like that, in a deep depression, as I'm sure you ladies have experienced, the last thing in the world that you want to do is actually go and sit in a chair and speak about it. So you're suggesting that medication, if it works for you, and doesn't work in all cases, but if it does work for you, is literally just to elevate you to be able to go to the next stage of being able to deal with the depression.
Yes, to retain information, to be able to do the therapeutic tasks, to be able to come together with yourself and with your coping support network, to be able to support yourself, to create the right environment for yourself, like you mentioned, Joe, as well, to be able to come out of that depression, to get off the slide sometimes. It's very hard to do it alone. And like we've been saying, you're not alone. So utilize that support system. Who do you have in your corner? And I think, which is very unfortunate for Nikki, there were people in your corner, but there were a lot of people against you, very publicly, which I think, in a sense, is a unique experience. In a sense, thankfully for the people who are watching this, that there aren't many people in the public eye, I guess, or there are more people not.
I mean, I'm dying to ask Nikki about her experience, mm-hmm. and we'll come to that in just a second, Nikki, because I think your experience of having to go through your darkest days under the gaze of the media is just, for me, horrific. Mm. Having experienced
palpitations.
We're going to let you just ease your palpitations, and I'm going to come back to Joe because we are coming to you in a second. But Joe, just to talk about that sliding for a second, and I was asking you now, because I think this is really useful and I think it's really important to anybody that's listening to this. You were going through a sliding journey that you can see now, mm-hmm. but maybe, I mean, let's face it, when you're in depression, you can't see things in a rational, logical,
mm-hmm.
there's no way out,
reasoned basis. You can't see things in the same way that you can if you are on
sad.
Top form, if you're out
Even
of
if you're
that.
Sad.
Exactly.
But you know what? One thing I want to say is that when you're in the abyss, wait, you have to cling on knowing that there is that light.
She's right.
And it's going to happen. And cling on to that knowledge.
Is the
it's
going
to happen in a week, 2 weeks, but it's going to happen. You're going to get out of it.
She's right.
So let's tackle, because this is a positive message and I want this as well, but let's keep on this theme because I want to identify for anybody who's watching or listening what that journey looks like for you.
Okay.
So you tried medication.
So
medication
I tried the medication
work.
For anxiety and I felt worse. Obviously, it was like, it's not logical, you know, you're supposed to be feeling better. So you're panicking that you're not feeling better and you're even more scared and you're like, oh my God, is it because I'm an artist? You know, in history, a lot of artists like do themselves in. So they're like, what's going to happen to me? But then you start to sort of quiet down and like the things you enjoyed no longer make sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when COVID, we had that little space in summer between the first bout of COVID and the second one.
I remember.
And we were kind of allowed to go out. And I used to think to myself, okay, we have a day by the pool at somebody's house. I can't go. What am I going to say? Me, you know, I can't shut my mouth for a second. And I was worried. What am I going to say? It takes everything out of you. You're not there anymore. So every day you wake up and you're like, Madonna, who is this woman living inside me? Whose wardrobe was this? Who used to create paintings? Who would laugh? Who would say, oh, you know what I want to do? This, this, and this. She's gone.
Mom went to cry.
Horrible. But the worst, and I forgot about this, somebody who has depression reminded me lately that you don't know what to say. You're telling yourself, I'm sitting there in a group of people and you're like, what shall I say? What shall I say? You can't formulate the thoughts. You're no longer verbal. That's why you want to stay in bed, because your system is shutting down. And no one really knows this. And it's so difficult, you know. And you're the biggest feeling you get is shame. Shame. I mean, I can remember an actual episode where I was at the beach. Somebody dragged me to the beach. I wanted to sleep. And they talked about, oh, I made this really nice dish yesterday, this new recipe. And I'm like, you see, you're terrible. You can't even cook anymore. You're a piece of beep. I wasn't driving. I wasn't painting. For me to go across the road to buy a packet of chips, I'm like, okay, honey, you can do it. Go, go. Shower, brush your teeth, do your hair, walk across and buy. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to pay it? Oh my God. It really does that to you.
And it was an escalated.
It kept getting worse.
It kept getting worse.
It kept getting
We're
going
to come back to you in a second because I want to discuss.
But you don't recognize yourself. That's the worst thing. And now I have the positive story. In the end, I'll tell you.
No,
there's something positive that comes out of this.
Absolutely. And we are not staying in that dark hole.
No, you don't have to stay in that dark hole.
We are going to, in a second, we're going to discuss your journey and Nikki's journey have brought you out at least to a point where you can talk about it.
No.
I'm coming back to you, Nikki, because I want to just talk about this slide. Would you say that you can recognize that your depression was triggered by postnatal depression? Yes. And then would you say that it was escalated? I mean, you, like I said, we're going to talk about the positive and how to get out of it in a minute. But before we get there, so that anybody who's listening or watching can identify what that looks like, you obviously went through all of this in the public eye, which again, as I reiterate, none of us can even possibly imagine what it's like to go through your darkest times under the scrutiny of everybody who has access to media. But you're going through, talk to me about this. You went through postnatal.
Mm-hmm. Then I was
you're
fine.
Depressed.
And then I had a couple of bouts of depression. Then I found myself I was always a public person. Because of my career and because I was the lawyer of Apoch, and I was always dealing with cases of domestic violence. So family law was, I've been a lawyer for 25 years. So for 20 years, I've been dealing with separations and cases of specializing in child abuse and domestic violence.
Wow.
So it's for me, it was the norm, because when you go to court, like I said, there's an alter ego, Nikki, that you know is not the Nikki of court, God forbid, because I'd make a really crap lawyer. But when I found myself in the public eye as an individual and I spoke about my depression and whatever, it was taken, it was welcomed, it was actually welcomed. However, when I was in the public eye as being a sort of like a prosthesis of somebody else, politics is a very dirty game. And unfortunately, I found myself being my mild depression, because I don't really suffer from severe depression, because it's bad. Yes, I can't get out of bed, but I can't say that it's so bad. I never get suicidal thoughts. I just say, oh God, another day I have to deal with the kids and the house is flying. And, you know, I mean, I'm going through a separation. And so obviously the way I live is not at all the way that I used to live before. because that's the justice system for you. Now, what happened is that my depression was used as a tool to silence me. Now, I am not a person who to be silenced. I am very correct, and if I see anything that I feel which is remotely not on the ball, or something is happening to me which is totally unacceptable, or to my children, I will fight tooth and nail. For me personally, in my private life, I'm quite a different person, but being in the public eye, in the political sphere, you know how it is. It's black, it's blue against red and red against blue. And I'm really not that kind of person. So I wasn't welcomed in the
political. You were weaponized.
I was. And I was, my depression was, certain people, who I won't mention names, but they know exactly who they are, would actually meet you, Joanna, for example, and they would say, yes, because, Nikki actually is bipolar. Like, hello.
But did this escalate?
As in, they were trying to, my mental health, which is, I don't even consider my mental health, because I don't consider myself as being mentally ill. I consider myself as being depressed. I get so sad that it verges on the, it verges onto depression. But that's why I say it's normalized, because there are so many people like me. Whoever I speak to.
But was your situation,
get me ejected from the.
But I'm just going to touch on that, because I think I'm going to keep coming back to this to make sure that we clarify this, mm-hmm. that depression, I don't want anyone to say that depression is normal. And the reason I don't want to say depression is normal.
No, it's not normal, but.
The reason I want to say depression is not normal is because if it's normalized, then it would make someone reluctant to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the conversation about depression being normalized. You talked about the fact that you couldn't get out of bed.
Yes.
And that is incredibly debilitating.
Not even having a shower. But having said that, it was not public knowledge because I spoke about it openly. I was weaponized because what happened was that in the public eye, the perception was made for me to appear as being a bit mad.
With regards to your journey, would you say that today you're in a better position than you were 5 years ago?
Definitely.
Are you experiencing more control over depression? And what helped you get out of that dark spot? Because when you talked about the dark place, you guys both jumped in and said, you, Nikki, you said you can get out of there. You hit the table and said,
you have to really fight it, but you
but,
do.
So tell me about your journey. How did you get away from that dark place?
Actually, it happened only recently. My last bout of depression was over Christmas time, because I think the festive period is the time that really triggers it. And I wasn't going through a very happy time at the time. And I was like, and I remember one day when I was literally feeling myself sinking into my mattress. And I just said, this is just it. How the hell am I going to be Nikki again? The happy, carefree person, not cooking for my kids. I was, going through a separation. I said, my God, this is just just the limits. With, I have to mention, my kids in the meantime understanding fully and supporting me and being so amazing. And then I just remembered there was just this one glimpse. And I just said, this isn't going to last forever. I've been in such a bad place. And when I look back to 5 years ago, to the worst time of my life, when I thought, there was no way out, and I did get out of it. When you're in that low place, you don't want somebody to sort of make you feel worthless because you said, get out of your bed.
Yeah, but then there's also grateful. The toxic positivity, which totally sucks.
Yes. Yeah.
You don't want to hear it.
Talk to me about this, because we've touched on that, but you came back to this toxic positivity. I want to look at this. We're talking about how to climb out of, and we've talked about sliding into, mm-hmm. and now we're talking about climbing out of. And I think it's really important to use those descriptions, because you're not going to take a pill, even if you take a medication, you are not going to be okay the next day.
No.
It is a climb.
Yeah.
And Nikki's talked about her climb out of that situation. Joe, talk to me. Joanne, talk. How did you get out of that situation?
Okay. So basically, I'd given up on therapy. I kind of just gave up on everything. I'm like, okay, now I have the rest of my life. I'm going to just live like this, like a shell. Wake up, sleep, watch Netflix, wake up, sleep. Blah. So you have very little joy. But come on, we don't deserve that, do we? So just by pure coincidence, I came across this trauma coach. I had never thought about trauma as being a trigger for depression, but it's a very hard journey. I mean, you have to go right to the very base, like the very core of you, you know, and it takes a lot of guts and like a lot of truth about yourself. So while you heal, it's terrible. You need a pair of balls to do that. But yeah. It's not impossible. And I'm telling you, if I could give one bit of advice about this, there's so much beauty in it, even about depression. There's real beauty in it. And you don't really hear about it much. But when you have lost yourself totally, which is what depression does to you, it strips you out. It makes you feel like you're the worst person in the world. You're just a burden. It's better if you don't exist. And that's why people commit suicide, because they feel it's better if they don't exist.
They believe.
It becomes very true.
Yeah.
You wish that, like, you sleep and you don't wake up, because everybody else would like, she's gone, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure it's not true. It was just me thinking that. What you need to do in that case is, I didn't know this. Your nervous system is crazy. You're not taking proper decisions. You're acting from a place of madness. And there are ways to heal this blinking nervous system that barely ever gets touched on. The first time I heard about the vagus nerve, I'm like, what? What's this? My beautician told me about it. So the beautician mentioned the vagus nerve.
What is the vagus nerve?
Now Google it.
We've got Eleanor. Don't worry. Eleanor's nodding away. She's going to come to the vagus nerve.
The nervous system, which has been in a permanent state of fight or flight, and then it goes into freeze. And I was in freeze, and maybe less than freeze, because there are like charts, but everyone can do their research about that. So then there are ways of healing your nervous system, and there's silly ways. And you're like, seriously, I'm going to do this. This trauma coach gave me a toolbox, which I must say I don't do it anymore, but I know that it's there. And I do try to do some of it. One of them is cold water therapy, which you can have a cold shower if you don't want to do that. I hate it, but you can even eat a bowl of frozen berries. That helps. Yeah. Or if you're in a restaurant and suddenly, like I used to, get a bout of anxiety, go to the bathroom, put your hands in freezing water, cold water, wash your face, take some deep breaths, tell yourself you're fine. And it's an instant, it works.
I've seen it.
Now, the other things are really fun for me. Singing. Although when you're depressed, the last thing you want to do is sing. Yeah. You switch off the music in nothing your car. Dead. I love music and I used to bloody like switch me, off the like music. Me. There's nothing worse than that. It literally stimulates your brain. Then there are other things. Like, I love this a thing called, you can find it on YouTube, called the Voo Meditation. It sounds crazy. Like, I tell everybody who's at home, buy stuff, I'm going to do the Voo. So basically, you have to sound like a foghorn. But this thing they use on veterans who have been through PTSD, and it helps. So,
you know what?
There's help out there, which we don't know about. Diet, you need to drink water. You need to stay hydrated, because being dehydrated also makes you anxious. Sugar is terribly bad for you. Being away from nature is terribly bad for you. So that explains why when I swim in winter, I feel so happy. That's the bit of nature we have. Not this winter, because I was too busy, but I'm well. If I don't feel well, the sea is my refuge. Wow. The sea, trees. Hug a fucking tree. Sorry. Oops.
You can say that's fine.
Hug a tree.
I love nature, your first green version of that.
The green. It's like, we're meant to be around nature. The concrete we're surrounded by, the pollution, the anger there is on the streets.
So you know what's really interesting is we talked about a perfect storm that generates and creates depression. Nikki's experience is incredibly valid to her, and it's personal to her. She had influencing factors that I don't think any of us can have ever experienced and probably will, and God forbid. And in Joe's case, Joanna, you just happened to mention past trauma almost as of a passing comment. And I think that's incredibly important that we also come back to talk about that in the future, because
I'll come again if you like.
You're very welcome. I'll get some more wine for all three of you and we'll have this conversation again. But there's a perfect storm that is unique to each individual that creates the right components and ingredients to mean that one person has depression. As you said yourself, identical twins could go through very similar experiences. One is affected by depression and the other isn't. But what's really interesting listening to you guys is that your way out of depression is as unique as your slide into depression. And so because we've talked about medication.
Totally alien.
We've talked about one and the other, and we've talked about your therapy trauma. So I think it's really important to address this. And I'm going to hand over to you, Eleanor, to come back to us as an expert addressing that.
Yes.
That each person's experience is individual, but what you recommend anybody who's listening or watching, what their starting point and what their journey might be.
I think if they're listening to this podcast, I think that's already a good starting point. And I absolutely adore the way that you spoke about your journey, your whole journey. But also
you feel silly doing it,
your
huh?
climb.
But you do it.
But it works.
Yeah, it does work.
And it works so uniquely.
I forgot to mention exercise.
Yes. So there's actually studies that show that 30 minutes of exercise every day does have a significant effect on levels of depression. So there are so many things out there, and it's about finding the right person and the right techniques for you. So if there is a therapist who is more into embodiment, into the vagus nerve. And
for me and Nikki, what is this vagus
nerve?
I'm not an expert in it, so I'm not going to be the person to explain it, but it's a way of using the limbic system and the...
limbic system?
There's a lot of stuff. You can look it up. It's fine.
But I've heard this. Is this a, can I never just check? Is this a recent thing? I've seen it an awful lot on social media. People talking about limbic systems.
So for example, yoga is as ancient as time. And it is something that is proven to support you to go through depression and through cancer treatments and through so many other illnesses and conditions in a way that it helps to support your mind and body connection. So exercise, I know for you, Trudy, it's running that is so supportive for you. And that's therapeutic in itself because your body gets moving, it gets going. And for other people, because of a million different reasons, running might not be for them. So it's not a one size fits all. So finding that person who speaks your language, who taps into your experience and what works for you. So for you, like you were saying, that really spoke true to you and that worked. And somebody might have a freezing cold shower and say, what was Joanna saying?
But you can do the other things.
It's about trying it. And even with these tasks, as we said for medication, it's also about these therapeutic tasks, these trial and error, what works for you and what doesn't. So the cold shower, using cold presses, even just at the back of your neck,
the tapping.
I heard about that.
They might work for someone who is more inclined to it, like Joanna, but maybe someone who is more...
like me, forget it.
Yeah, so maybe
can't say like Nikki,
someone like Nikki, maybe cognitive behavioral therapy, which is more structured, would speak more to your language. And so it's about finding what works for you. So even before going to a therapist, understanding who they are, seeing a little bit about their background and if they resonate with you. When you meet a professional, you're both seeing, do we work well together? Can I help you?
Yeah, there's actual chemistry.
Of course. So if we had to meet and we clicked, great. So we will work on what the goals are and we'll build on it. But if we were to meet and it didn't click, maybe I would then offer to recommend a colleague who I can see working yeah. with you beautifully.
And if I can echo what both of these ladies have said through their own experiences and what you're saying now, if you're in depression, you're going through the worst time of your life. And having a connection with someone that you believe in mm-hmm. that is going to assist you, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a psychiatrist, whether it's a psychologist,
yeah.
that connection is incredibly important. It is vitally important. And I think it's worth saying that for anybody, we go back to this thing about shame. If you don't connect, there's no shame in that.
Exactly.
It's like going on a first date. You don't always make it. You don't always make it. I wasn't meaning to point at you, Nikki. But if you're going on a first date, you're not necessarily going to have that chemistry with that person.
You're human.
You know, Trudy, you need to have a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
That's and the worst part when you think you don't.
And I think
it always is.
If I can also add, it is about working to find your protective factors as well. What do you already have within you that is going to help you through this, which you cannot see? And that is why the support system, whether it's a therapist, a friend, whoever it might be, it's so important to find that connection and to get support, to get out of bed, to get into nature. And everything that you mentioned is all statistically proven to support general well-being and mental health in general, like Nikki was saying, which is different to being clinically depressed, but they do help with clinical depression to get that they momentum and going free. And they're free. So it is beautiful, but we do need to support the person to identify what they have going for them and to support that encouragement and finding, like you said, that sense of self again. Who am I? What do I like doing? What do I enjoy doing? And engaging that again until the brain remembers, ah.
We're going to come to some closing thoughts, and I'm going to ask each of you ladies to finish our time at this table with something that is inspiring and that's going to help motivate somebody who's listening or watching this to move forward and to learn from your experiences. Because if, I mean, just as you have done, Nikki, you've spoken out about this, and that empowers other people to understand that talking about it is normal. So I'm going to come around the table, starting with you, Joe. I asked you a minute ago, you said I already thought my closing thought is. That's why I'm coming to you first.
Okay.
So how would you summarize? What is your closing thought for this edition of this? Because I'm pretty sure we're going to be here again.
So we said that depression makes you lose everything, right? So you have an idea of what you were like before, and you lose that person, and you mourn that person, because when you're nowhere and you wake up and she's not there, I'm like, please, before I said I'm going to comment about bubbly, I hated being called bubbly. I felt it was like some like fluffy little thing floating around the air. Now, when
amazing.
Someone calls me bubbly, I'm like, yes, come back, my bubbly, I love you. And that's because you miss who you were. You realize what you were. You say, oh my God, that woman, she was amazing. You hadn't realized it before, but now you know. So depression, when you kind of pause and lose who you were and she comes back, oh my God, it's like the prodigal son, but like, about you. And that's brilliant. That's a brilliant feeling. And you'll never forget it.
And that's possible.
And I've experienced it myself.
Eleanor, your closing thoughts, your big beaming smiling face there, give us some positivity for anyone watching or listening.
I think hearing Joe, being able to hold your inner child is such difficult work, like you're saying, it takes so much. I know that's my closing statement, continuing a little bit from what you, Joe beautifully expressed. My closing statement would be, you are not alone. Have this conversation. And it is so important to be kind to yourself, to be compassionate, and to reach out. There's so much support no matter what you're going through, whether it's menopause, whether it's postpartum, whether you are pregnant, even though you've wanted this pregnancy for so long and find yourself feeling depressed. It doesn't make sense. And that's the point. It doesn't make sense. So reach out so that you can see the light at the end of the tunnel and bring in your support system and allow them to help you get out of it if they are encouraging, because that is such an a positive, protective coping strategy as well. And maybe something about coping strategies is how important it is to find what works for you, that is a positive and healthy coping strategy that you can maintain and that is sustainable.
I don't go back and I say, where is Nikki, who sort of like graduated 25 years ago? Or where is Nikki, the 10-year-old, you know, bubbly person and tomboy? No, every time, every episode, Nikki develops into a better person. It's like, you know, like a caterpillar develops into a butterfly. I'm hardly a butterfly. But every time you just get, you better yourself. The deeper the hit, I mean, the harder you fall, you know, you surface. You're like a phoenix. You rise from the ashes.
I think it's true.
And you... However, I really, really think that it is so important that unless you feel, I mean, there's such a difference between being sad and being depressed. So when you have that little thing that you literally can't control it and you just feel so lethargic that you can't continue with your daily chores. I mean, I really admire you because I was not capable and I'm not capable of doing a load, let alone feeding my children when I'm feeling really sad. And thank God my children, I mean, I can't thank God enough for having had them. I mean, they drive me insane, but they are my saving grace. Having said that, whenever you feel that real terrible feeling, if you're not capable and forget being demeaning and telling that person that they have to be grateful for what they have, because you think they're not grateful, you think they're not feeling bad and they don't want to get out of bed and do and continue with their daily chores. You think they don't want to go and hug their children. You think that they want to snap at their children because their children are coming in when they're having a sobbing moment and they want to just be in a blacked out room. No, we don't want that. But every time that happens, if you are feeling so bad, like medication didn't work for me and continues not to work for me, I think that if you are feeling so bad, it's imperative that you seek medical help, because otherwise, if you are in such a bad place, it can only get worse, because most people are so ignorant on the subject and it's such a taboo that many a time, if you don't have, like I had my children, God knows where I'd have been, because every time it was like, Nick, you know, you're this and you're that. And yes, I have so many things to be grateful for. But at that moment, you don't care.
No. That's it.
You don't care.
That is absolutely it. And I just want to finish up by saying that both of you ladies, and Eleanor said it herself, and I'm going to say it as well from personal experience, I think it's worth reiterating that there is no place that is too dark that you cannot come back from. There is no place that is so far away that you cannot come back from. Just as Joe said, there's going to be some work. Just as you said, you have to find the right formula for you. But there is no place too far, too dark, and too desperate that you cannot come back from. And I want to say also, we'll give all of the details for anybody who needs to get assistance. It's going to be under here if you're watching YouTube. It's going to be on our social media channels. It's going to be on the comments underneath the Spotify. But right now I want to say, ladies, thank you for sharing your journey.
I'm done with my wine.
We've annihilated this beautiful bottle of Primitivo. You chose a Primitivo and it's all gone. But cheers. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Keep doing what you're doing, ladies.
Cheers.
Cheers.